it's time to take off on the Award Travel 101 podcast. Helping you maximize your travel rewards, no matter your destination or budget. Now here are your hosts, Award Travel 101 community managers, Angie Sparks and Joseph Petrovic, to help you do extraordinary things on ordinary money.
When it comes to award travel, earning points is easier than redeeming them for the best value. Rather than spending hours per trip searching on your own, let Thrifty Traveler Premium's army of flight analysts do the work for you with their customized premium alerts. Since we're seeing award space to more locations than we've seen in years, you will know that you have a partner you can trust watching out for you and that you're getting a great deal every single day from Thrifty Traveler's premium alert service.
Whether using miles or points, or you're just looking for a cheap cash flight, Thrifty Traveler Premium will send customized alerts just for you. Just recently, with the help of Thrifty Traveler's premium alerts, I was able to book the brand new Japan Airlines A350-1000 in business class to Tokyo for just 60,000 American Advantage miles and $5.60. I booked previous alerts like Emirates business class from Milan on the A380 for 73,000 points, Iberia business class to Venice for 34,000 points, and business class on ITAs, or you might recognize it as ITA, brand new A330-900neo for 54,000 points from Rome to New York City. So if you want more premium deal award alerts sent straight to your inbox, head on over to thriftytraveler.com and use promo code AT10 for $10 off your first year and tell us where you're hoping Thrifty Traveler Premium will take you. Welcome to episode 61 of the Award Travel 101 podcast. My name's Joseph Petrovic, and I'm here with Mike Sacchio. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Joe. Good to see you again. See you virtually from 100 miles down the road versus meeting up physically 10,000 miles away.
Yes, and we're going to get into that in our main feature in Points Down Under. But first, let's hop over into the news. United, pulling miles.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And as of the time that we record this, we're kind of undetermined right now how this is going to work, because United came out with this. They announced the mileage pooling. You can basically pool miles between up to five people with four others. And then the next day, they promptly took it down. So we don't know what's going on, but I definitely like this possibility, you know, especially with traveling with the family. Obviously, I think they want to structure it so they, you know, people can't abuse it as other programs have. I think Aeroplan had some of that they promptly had to shut down. So I don't know if they were just premature in rolling it out, but I think the possibility is nice. And, you know, of course, in this industry, it's always a monkey see, monkey do. So United does something, maybe American and Delta will also. So it's good to see.
Yeah, with the pooling feature, I think one of the limitations, though, is that you couldn't use the miles everywhere, correct?
Yeah, it was only on United Metal or, you know, United Express. So that is a limitation. But, you know, for some people, that's still pretty valuable. I mean, I think of, like, you know, family trips and stuff, like the trip that we took last year to the Grand Canyon. The majority of the miles in our family, but, you know, my wife and kids have a few. And if, you know, it's rather than just kind of letting them lay dormant, it's good to be able to pull them and utilize it.
Absolutely. Next, we have an updated ink bonus. So they've changed not the bonus itself, but the payout of the welcome offer and the tier structure. So it is a tiered bonus, and it's still 75,000 points as of this recording. However, you can get some of those points earlier.
Yeah, it's funny to see how a lot of these bonuses are going. It seems like it's a trend with some of the business cards, like the United Hyatt business card, which has kind of a similar structure. So it's you know, more ends up being more spend, but for pretty much the same amount of points as it was earlier, or less. Like with this ink cash, as I'll mention in a little bit, that I hopped on when it was 90K for only 6,000.
And it's still 6,000 for the 75,000 points, but now it's 3,000. You get your first 35. And then when you finish the full 6,000, then you get the additional 40,000 points.
You get the additional 40K when you spend a total of 6K in the first 6 months.
Yeah. So it gives you a little bit extra time to knockouts out bonus for some of those who may not be able to spend so quickly. Mm-hmm. Next, we have built. They taketh away and then they giveth.
Yeah, this caused some changes that required an update of the transfer partner matrix. So they eliminated American, which was kind of surprising because they were one of the few programs, or maybe the only program, so that may be Marriott, that has transfer partners with two domestic airlines, two pretty big, significant domestic airlines, United and American. Well, they're cutting them out. And then they're actually replacing them with another oneworld North American airline, Alaska. That's actually pretty significant in itself because that's going to mark the only transfer partner that Alaska has in history. I don't think they've ever had a transfer partner. And, I think that definitely, Alaska miles can be very valuable in a lot of the cases, not just for flying Alaska, but for a lot of their partner arrangements. So this could definitely be a good benefit for Bilt.
Yeah, and of course, Marriott Bonvoy does have Alaska as well. So it's just that most people won't be earning in the same amount that they would be with, say, Bilt. So that's something we'll link into the show notes so you can read more. And finally, on the Award Wallet blog, you have a post about tracking travel plans with Award Wallet. And that this is a feature I don't think a lot of people really know that is there.
Yeah, this is something that I use. You know, I know there's a lot of trip tracking apps out there like TripIt and Flighty, but I mean, I have all of my stuff integrated with Award Wallet anyway. So anytime, I get an email or itinerary change, it comes through. And a lot of times, especially if there's irregular operations, typically Award Wallet's the first one to notify me. Like if my flight's delayed, if it's canceled, if gate changes, a lot of times they're the first ones that let me know. So that's definitely a nice feature.
I wanted listeners and Award Travel 101 members to know about a limited time special offer to save 50% off Point.me. Point.me is one of my two go-to search tools, and we had co-founder Tiffany Funk in the Award Travel 101 community live last Thursday, March 14th, 2024, which we'll link here in the comments. Through March 31st, 2024, you can get Point.me for just $64.50 when registering for the standard annual plan. That's half off the most robust award search tool in existence today. Don't hesitate and use the code AWARDTRAVEL101 to get unlimited live award searches for just over $5 per month. Again, that's AWARDTRAVEL101 to save half off your first year subscription. Happy hunting! So with that, let's hop over into what bonuses did we get. I have nothing this week, so Mike, take it away.
Yeah, well, since we last talked, I got a couple. One was the in cash, and that was under the offer back in January, 90K for 6K of spend. Additionally, we have the current offer now, but I do find the in cash quite valuable with a lot of the office supply purchases that I make. Like I'm renovating my home office, so I'm actually using that to purchase some equipment there. Also, another bonus I got was not a credit card, but the Amex Business checking account. So this had a bonus of 50K membership rewards. This checking account, I think, is kind of unique because it comes with a debit card that actually earns membership rewards. So it earns, some of the transferable currency that we all know and love. It's not at a great rate. It's one MR per $2 spent. And I mean, I haven't found a really great way to leverage it, but, I might consider it for something like paying my cell phone bill if I, don't want to rely on some of the protections, because a lot of the like Verizon and carriers charge a lot for they charge a fee for utilizing a credit card. So maybe that could come in handy. I don't know. One thing about this debit card, though, it does charge ATM foreign fees. So it's not as good as like the Charles Schwab or some others that I would carry and use internationally. But it is a nice little checking account. It works pretty well. And, for what I use for my side business, it does work pretty well.
I need to actually check into this and maybe we'll update in a future episode, because I recently received an email from American Express, because I've had this for probably close to a year now. And the email that I received said something about that they now have ATMs worldwide where you can access this. So there may some, I think it said something like 70,000 plus ATMs worldwide where you can access. I didn't read enough of that because I have a Charles Schwab card on its way, so I won't be worrying about it too much, but we'll look into that some more and do a little follow-up in a future episode.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly can't go wrong with Schwab. It's really one of the best out there. Before we talk about our main feature, let's talk about some trip updates. I don't really have too much going on right now, but what do you have in the works, Joe?
One of the things that Allison posted in the group the other day with Southwest is that they'd recently opened their schedule. And a lot of times people are looking to save on their travels when they first open, because they typically are opening during a desirable period. Maybe it's, you know, into summer travel or it's into fall travel. In this case, it happened to go, I think, all the way through Thanksgiving. And when they do that, sometimes you can get good deals. Now, I haven't seen a lot lately, but I went back as and used it as a reminder that I needed to check what I already have booked. And I only have two flights booked with them this summer. And one of those flights went down significantly in price. And so I was able to just click, you know, select that flight, and I saved myself 16,000 Rapid Rewards points. So just always go recheck those bookings that you have through Southwest. One of them was more expensive, so I certainly wouldn't have wanted to change that one. But, you know, 16,000 points is 16,000 points. It's something I can use for the future.
Yep. Garden your reservations. Book early, book often.
Speaking of gardening, I rebooked a car rental in the Caribbean. As this episode airs, I will actually be returning from the Caribbean. We're flying down to the U.S. Virgin Islands. And I had a car booked, and I just checked a few days ago, and the car rate had come down $130. So I rebooked that as well. I also intend to do something I've never done. I've always put the car rentals on either the Sapphire Reserve or the Chase Inc. Preferred. And that's for the second or the primary coverages. I'm actually going to be using the American Executive card for this particular one, because I have this booked through Avis. And with Avis, there happens to be a $120 credit through the executive card. So I'm going to reduce my car rental a little further, and hopefully nothing goes wrong. I don't recall that that card had coverages on it. I don't believe it does. But
yeah, I don't think Citi's great with that.
That's something that, you know, we'll try to get the most out of there and go from that. And with that in mind, I don't know what I'm taking home again. So here it is with three flights, and three hotels booked, because I can't.
That's it.
I can't figure out which plane I'm actually taking to come home. Too many different options to save some money. So I do have some booked on American Miles. I have some booked using Chase Ultimate Rewards through the portal on Delta. It is fully refundable. I'm probably going to cancel the one using Ultimate Rewards and pick one of the two, which is ultimately going to get me into Charlotte, North Carolina, 2 days before Easter, and then I'll drive home from there.
Well, actually, that's better than driving from Atlanta, probably.
Yeah, it's 7 to 8 hours, so we'll get home the day before Easter. I know some people in Charlotte, so I'll probably meet up down there and then head on home the following day, and we'll make the most of it.
Yeah. And who knows, some last minute space might come up and, you know, you can get something directly back to Cleveland.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of waiting for. I do have some seats held, but I refuse to pay 70,000 Advantage miles per person in economy to fly home from the Caribbean when I know that I can go a lot further with those miles.
Yeah. Further, like where?
Speaking of which, let's hop over to our highlight feature, which is Points Down Under. Mike and I both flew to Sydney, Australia. You did it like 2 weeks ago. I did it a week ago. And we managed to both fly the same airlines in reverse. But why don't you hop into what you did and share with everybody how you booked it?
Yeah. So I had planned this trip for a while now. This is probably a long time coming. Well, probably for the 11 months when the schedule first opened. I was first keyed onto it when we talked about this, I think, at length before, when we were all sitting around and all of a sudden they had this Polaris availability open up and you could pretty much go anywhere in the world for saver rates. So I'm like, well, where do I want to go? Well, let's go to Australia. And it happened to be around my birthday. So I kind of use this as a catalyst to book a pretty much a bucket list birthday trip. And I think everything worked out pretty well. So I attempted to skip my birthday, you know, by taking off from LA, crossing the international date line, and then arriving in Sydney the day after.
So you're not aging at all, right?
Well, I think so. I mean, I'm looking at stuff like I logged into the YMCA the other day and it said that my age was 40. So I don't know if it worked, but it was a good trip. So what I did was I first started with a positioning flight. And it kind of violates one of my own rules by flying in the opposite direction, flying east to go west. But I would make an exception for particular products, like if it's a lie-flat transcon, like AA. So I booked the AA, it's the A321T, that's the three-class, or I guess, yeah, three-class specialty aircraft that flies from JFK to, I think, JFK and Boston to California, like LAX. So I did Cleveland, little hopper over to JFK. Spent some time in the Greenwich Lounge, which I had been to previously when it was just a flagship. But I think they actually did a pretty nice job renovating some of the areas. They took over the space that they were using for an Admirals Club, made that like a full tended bar. Then there's the Bridge Bar. That actually wasn't open, but it's a very nice space, kind of secluded. So pretty good lounge. If you're flying a transcon or a flagship route and you don't have status, that would be the lounge. Obviously, if I was flying first class, I'd go to the Chelsea Lounge. Or if I was flying international, since I have status with One World, I would go to the Soho Lounge. But the Greenwich was pretty good. Ooh, that was 32K AA miles each. So not a bad deal. Flew into LA Friday night. We rented a car. I think it was like $60 for the car through National. Yeah, I had to put up with some LA traffic for a bit to drive to Hollywood because we wanted to check out that area. And also I wanted to stay at a property that I saw actually recently some friends had stayed at and recommended, the Dream Hollywood. It was it's actually a category 6. And coincidentally, I had a category 1 through 7 award expiring. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just use it. It's probably not the optimal use. Obviously, it's not like, you know, Category 7 Park Hyatt or something. But it was a pretty good use. Great location, neat pool deck. While we were there, we did I booked a tour through Viator of the Warner Brothers studio. That was actually pretty neat. Not quite what I expected. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff outside and just, you know, it's neat to see, you know, where a lot of these things were filmed. So that was pretty neat. And we made our way back to LAX, dropped the car off. And actually, this was the only time ever that I dropped the car off. I did the return, you know, drove into the return lane, parked the car, got our luggage out. And the bus was like 20 feet away. It was like on the other side of the sidewalk, got on the bus. And then it was probably a 45-minute trip to get to the terminal in LAX because all the traffic and all that construction and it's just a mess. I mean, LA is not for the weak-hearted. But yeah, we checked into LAX. Actually, so due to the construction and all of that, they dropped us off. Well, what I thought was Terminal 4 ended up, we went to the door, went up an elevator, ended up in Terminal 5, which I didn't quite realize. And I was asking somebody, you know, they had the priority check-in. And I asked somebody where the flagship first check-in was, because I knew by right, as a executive flying with American, I'm flying a flagship route, I can check in flagship first. Well, this agent was, you know, dead set. No, that's wrong. You need to be concierge key. Though, and that's that. And she asked me where I was flying to. I said I was going to Sydney. She said, no, that's only for JFK and London. You can't go there. You need to check in here. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure you're wrong. Like, you know, I just need to know how to get there. Well, she refused to help. So I ended up finding, I walked outside, found the flagship first check-in. The agents graciously welcomed me. My name was on a list. I mean, so I could, by right, use that check-in. Wonderful check-in experience. They walked us down to the front of the pre-check line. So it's almost like using Clear, like they just walk you down to the front. Went through there. And then by also knowing my lounge rights, I was counseled that the best lounge for me to go to was Qantas First. And I think the recommendations didn't disappoint. It's a great lounge. Food service is excellent. It's generally not very crowded. I know you did it as well. How was your experience?
I can say that my experience probably wasn't quite as exciting as yours, because obviously I got to experience both the one in Sydney as well as the one in Los Angeles. But one of the things that stood out to me in Los Angeles, and I'm sure, you know, the service is great. It's nice to have people attending to you and all that. But it's very dingy. It reminds me of the Chelsea Lounge. There's no windows. You can't see anything. Yeah. Everything's closed off. Whereas the Qantas First Lounge in Sydney, you can actually overlook the tarmac. You're right over the planes. You get to see all the 380s and everything there. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other disappointing thing for me was that I came in for two breakfasts in a row. So I got to the Qantas Lounge Tuesday morning for breakfast, flew across the ocean 15 hours and landed for Qantas Lounge breakfast in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So I had the same exact thing.
So you didn't get the salt and pepper squid and the minute steak?
No.
I mean, I thought for a lounge, I thought it was very good. You know, of course, P2 made fun of me, said that having my birthday dinner in a lounge was sad, but hey, what I like to do. So then obviously that's not the only lounge I went to, because when you have lots of time and access, obviously you got a lounge hop. I did pop down to the Centurion Lounge, saw that they had a wait list, and I just turned around and walked away. I'm not putting up with that. And I don't hear great things about that Centurion Lounge, but I hadn't been, so I did want to just check it out, but it's not worth waiting. So after that, I went to, because obviously that the Qantas First Lounge is in the Tom Bradley International Terminal. I was departing out of Terminal 4, so I went to the flagship lounge there. And the flagship lounge there is excellent. It's, which I believe you also went to. I mean, good food spread. I really wasn't hungry at that point, but very good spread. You do have nice views of the tarmac. I did notice they, and I think they do have, you know, since it's LA, they have a lot of it configured for VIPs, because they do have this door that goes right down to the tarmac. So I think they can board people from the lounge if they wanted to. Obviously, we didn't have that access, but our gate was right next to the lounge. So that was pretty good. But I also hopped over to the Admirals Club, because we have friends that were joining us on this trip. So they came in from DCA. They met us. In order to guest them in, I needed to go. I couldn't bring guests to the flagship, so I had to bring them to the Admirals Club. So did that. So excellent. Then I hopped on the 15 hours across the ocean. We'll talk more about the flights later, but landed in Sydney. Had pretty good arrival experience through their passport control, customs, all of that. Then I hopped a cab to the first hotel of the trip, the Hyatt Regency Sydney. So I spent four nights there. It was 60K Hyatt points, so 15K a night, really not bad deal. It's a Category 4. It's a pretty nice hotel. It's, you know, your typical Hyatt Regency. And I like, you know, I like Regencies. You know, they are pretty consistent in their, you know, in the amenities they offer. You know, breakfast was excellent. Had a pretty good spread, lots of selection. It is a big business conference hotel. There was pretty much, it seems like pretty much everywhere there was like on business, on a conference or something. I was upgraded to the Harborview Executive Suite. So it was a, you know, two-room suite. Wasn't a huge amount of space, but it was good. I mean, we had a balcony, overlooked Darling Harbor. Darling Harbor, to me, honestly, it kind of almost reminds me of like the Baltimore Inner Harbor, which, I mean, isn't, you know, obviously not the most iconic harbor in Sydney, but it's pretty nice. And the area, you know, we were near the a lot of shopping. Like there was a mall there, several arcades, you know, like the Cleveland Arcade of Sydney. This one other, probably even fancy one, the Queen Victoria Building, which is this other shopping arcade. And then, a couple of things that we did. We went to Bondi, did the cliff sidewalk or coastal walk. Not all the way to Koji, which is like the trail, but we went about halfway, stopped at some beaches, stopped in some of the coastal pools, which I really found interesting because like all along Australia, they have these coastal pools, which is basically saltwater swimming pools, which almost is an extension of the ocean. Like the waves crash over it. And I mean, it's a pool, and that's like their public pool, their public swimming area. So very nice. Took some great pictures there. Then I booked a couple tours through Viator, did a wine tour of the Hunter Valley region. That was pretty good. My only complaint there was the distance. It was they picked us up in a bus, and then it was about 2.5 hours, like before we got to the first stop, drove around a bit. Then obviously at the end of the day, we had to drive about 2.5 hours back. So we probably spent about 60% of our time on a bus, which to me, like the bus to the transportation to activity ratio, I usually like to get more activities than spending time on the bus. So probably in the future could skip that. But then the other tour that we did, which was excellent, was the Blue Mountains. So we took a bus to the Blue Mountains, probably about an hour and a half. Saw a lot of the overlooks, went to Scenic World, which is like this old, it's like a mine, coal mine that they basically converted to have, tourists come and see the scenery. They have they have cable cars. They have like a funicular, kind of like they have in Pittsburgh, going up and down the Duquesne Incline, all that, very similar. And then on the way back, we stopped at an animal park. It was the Featherdale Animal Park. And that was a good experience because it was pretty small. And it was very focused on local animals. So it was all Australian animals. They had koalas and kangaroos and wallabies and dingoes all over the place. Got some good pictures. 100% of the time, the koalas were sleeping. Like all they do is just sleep and chill and not a bad life. So then we came back. Then the next day we did a few other things. Oh, we went to Manly Beach, which obviously is probably one of my favorites. And I think you went there too, right? Per our recommendation.
Yeah.
Really neat area, really nice beach. So we got back from Manly, checked out from the Hyatt Regency, went over to the Park Hyatt because that was always my plan to split the stay because obviously the Park Hyatt is a lot pricier. It was 170K Hyatt point for 4 nights. But I'll tell you, it was excellent. I mean, it's one of the best Hyatts in the world. It's really, it's in a completely iconic location. In the rocks, like right next to the Harbor Bridge, you can see you walk out the door and you see the Opera House. The Opera House, there's an Opera House view from many of the rooms as well. Excellent. We had a Harbor View King room. It had very large sitting area. I mean, almost like a suite, but it wasn't broken up. So actually, there was quite a lot of room, even more room than at the Hyatt Regency. We did have a view of the Opera House. It was from the balcony. So we basically had to go on the balcony and, look to the side and we saw the Opera House. So it was pretty good. 10-minute walk to Circular Quay, which was like the transportation hub, as you know, like where all the ferries go and there's a railway station. Breakfast was pretty good. You mostly order off the menu. Plus there's like, pastry station. Honestly, I probably could have ordered whatever I want, but as far as selection, actually, I think the Hyatt Regency had a much bigger spread on their buffet, but I think the quality, obviously, of the Park Hyatt was better. So while we were there, since we were close, we did the bridge climb. So we did, it was a several hour, I think it was like a 3 hour experience where they put you in a harness. Well, you're in a jumpsuit harness, you get all sorts of different gear, and then you walk up the bridge. First you walk under the girders, and then you walk up a bunch of ladders, and then you walk up the bridge, and then they take your picture, and then you walk down the other side. I mean, it was awesome. And we did the twilight, so the sun was still up when we went, and then by the time we walked down, the sun had set. Then we did the Opera House tour, since we were also right there around the harbor. I did an architectural tour, which I actually don't recommend because our friends actually just did a regular tour. And it seems like they were able to see a lot more for the regular tour. They actually saw both of the main presentation halls, the concert hall and then the theater, where we only saw the concert hall. And for some reason, they had a really strict photography policy on us. She said, absolutely no photography inside the concert hall. even though there wasn't anything going on, like there was no copyrighted material or anything, where our friends were able to take pictures in the concert hall. So it was just a little weird. So if you do that, don't do the architectural tour, just do the regular tour. It was pretty good. Then, you know, we were there for St. Patrick's Day. So, and that's actually when you showed up. We had pancakes on the rocks. Some of the best pancakes I ever had. It was pretty good. And I mean, honestly, I am more of a waffle guy, but the pancakes were pretty good. And then the St. Patrick's Day festivities, I mean, they really go all out there. So there's no doubt that they have a good St. Patrick's Day celebration. Then we had just another day. Our friends left. You were still around. So, you know, we had some crepes and hung out a little bit. And then the next day we left. So that's when we flew out of Sydney in the morning. Late morning was our flight. Hit up a few lounges. The Amex lounge, I think they call it a Centurion now, but it used to just be an Amex lounge. And I wouldn't say it's like you were there. It's not exactly at the caliber of a Centurion lounge, but, you know, it's still pretty decent.
Did have a pancake machine, though.
It did have a pancake machine. Yes, yes. I mean, I think I was still full from pancakes from the they were placed the other day. And then, of course, you know, you can't just go to one lounge. So then I checked out since I was flying Star Alliance United, I could go to the New Zealand lounge and the Singapore lounge. And those were both pretty good. I'd say the New Zealand lounge, probably, if I was going to pick one lounge, I'd probably go to the New Zealand lounge. It's bigger. They probably have a bigger food spread. Singapore was, I mean, it was smaller. I think it was a bit more crowded because it was less space. So then we hopped on our flight and spent time at the Polaris Lounge in Houston once we arrived, and then hopped back to Cleveland. So overall, quite a good adventure. And, you know, it's one of those things that I planned, and I did have a couple backups along the way that I did eventually get rid of, you know, prior to departure.
Well, and this flight was booked way out in April of 2023.
Yeah, this was the flight that I got. Yeah, this was initially what anchored everything. That this was the deal I got for 80K United miles, which was pretty good, because since then there was a devaluation, and now it was now I think they charge what, 100?
Yeah, it's 100,000 miles now.
Yeah,
it was 80,000 at the time. I think they increased the award cost 25% back in May of last year. So yeah, it was already, I guess, a little bit pricey in my view, just given that you could have booked the same exact flight through ANA for 120,000 if you were going to fly it round trip. But then, of course, you wouldn't have been able to make the changes that you did. And you ended up, you were originally going to do something kind of crazy like me and have a much shorter trip. And eventually you changed all this so that you could go out a week earlier, whereas I did this whole thing in basically 4 days' time.
Yeah. I wanted to have a reasonable amount of time, like a sane person.
Yeah. So I had booked the same flight that Mike was talking about returning on. I booked it through Houston, heading out to Australia. And that's what actually allowed me to take this trip, because I booked this at the tail end of this award opening. I was booking the return flight when United closed off the awards. So I could not get that. I eventually booked Delta One with 95,000 miles. I've talked about that before. I had Delta One coming home. But the interesting thing was that 15 days ahead of schedule for United and 14 days ahead of schedule for American, Saver Awards became available for both of those. And I said, why not have all three booked? And, you know, who knows if one's going to get delayed or one's going to be a problem. And I ended up having all three booked for the return. But, you know, the flight into Australia, just like you, was pretty smooth. I actually changed my flight coming into Houston because there were a lot of storms that day. And so I jumped on an earlier flight from Cleveland to Houston just to make sure that I didn't get misconnected. And I realized that if I had a misconnect, my whole trip was ruined. You know, it's not like some people who are going for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks or more to Australia and saying, this is a one-time thing. I was going for literally 52 hours on the ground. And at 52 hours on the ground, if I lose 24 of those, this whole trip is shot. I might as well just give up now. So I found an opportunity to do a same day change to an earlier flight. And as I was walking around Houston, I actually jumped around. There's priority pass lounges. I tried out two of the different priority pass lounges. I went to the Amex Centurion lounge. I went to what else? I went to the United Polaris lounge. And I actually met another Award Travel 101 member there. And he was flying into Sydney. Of course, he was spending more time there, but we were on the same flight. But as I was moving from one lounge to the next, I got a text on my phone from a local person saying, "Hey, where are you? I thought you were going to be on my flight." And I'd forgotten that I have a local person who was supposed to be on our Sydney flights, but he was also on the later flight from Cleveland to Houston. And that flight nearly misconnected. They landed with plenty of time, but they sat on the tarmac for like an hour, hour and a half before they were able to get to the gate. And he made the flight with like 20, 30 minutes to spare. But I would have been panicking, like, I'll get out with that. So I'm glad I didn't do
that. Sounds like you made a good choice. And you got to experience all the lounges. So what was your favorite lounge in Houston?
I think as I thought about it, the Polaris Lounge was okay. But I actually enjoyed just going to the Priority Pass restaurants instead. Both the Amex Centurion Lounge and the United Polaris were just too crazy for me. They didn't have any quiet spaces. The dining was too crammed in both places, and I just didn't really enjoy it. I met another member who was actually flying to Sydney as well, one of our Award Travel 101 and 201 members. Kathy was there, but she was not on my flight. She was meeting up with a friend in San Francisco, so I met up with her. And so I met, you know, a lot of people throughout this whole trip, and, you know, it was ended up being, we talked about this being United's longest flight, this Sydney to Houston, Houston to Sydney. And my flight was even longer because it went out of its way to avoid storms. So it went, typically this cuts through Mexico, and it went north up towards New Mexico instead before cutting down through like the California Pacific. My flight was almost 18 hours long. And if you look at that and the distance it must have flied, it probably came close. It's listed as the number 10 longest flight in the world as a total. Of course, it's United's longest overall. But for me personally, this probably came in at the number 8 or number 9 longest flight in the world. And that's only a half an hour to 45 minutes off of those two number 1 and number 2 flights, which is Singapore to both JFK and Newark.
Yeah. Time-wise, you really got there. And because you were flying west, your block time was almost
way longer.
Was probably 2 hours longer than my time was flying east. Because both of my flights were about 15 hours.
Yeah.
Because I would, based on where, you know, the winds and everything in the direction. Yeah, I was. So you took the same route as me, except in reverse. And you were and it took you 3 more hours. So you had 3 more hours to enjoy Polaris.
And you can say enjoy. I mean, I had no problem with that length of flight, but I did not sleep well on either plane. I got maybe 4 hours on the Polaris flight. And so I woke up with 9 hours left to go. And so I just did some work and stuff like group stuff and whatever I could there. But the cool thing is, like you said, when we landed, everything was smooth through immigration. I had happened to have a tip from one of the older travel bloggers who happened to move out there, and I got a chance to meet up with Andy Luton, and we got a chance to have coffee. But he'd given me a tip. He's like, "Hey, go get all your immigration tags, and you can kind of skip through real quick. And once you do that, you can hop on the train from the airport over to Circular Quay, which goes right into the heart of the business district." I was staying at the Four Seasons Sydney, which I booked through Fine Hotels and Resorts. Originally, I had the Hyatt Regency booked. And the Park Hyatt was just too rich for my blood for just me being there and nobody else. So it wasn't like I had anybody to share and enjoy this with. So I booked the Four Seasons Sydney with Fine Hotels and Resorts, used up a $200 platinum credit, ended up being about $530 for the 2 nights I was there. They had an incredible breakfast. I shared a post in the group on the whole breakfast display. This has to have been, for a buffet type style breakfast, probably one of the most amazing breakfasts I've ever had. And I honestly was disappointed that our flights left so early. that I ended up missing that breakfast as I was leaving because I was ending up waking up early. And I said, I might as well just get to the airport now rather than messing around for the return. And I really don't want to get screwed coming back. So I ended up heading out. But I have to say, there were a couple of things that were really nice about the touches. And I'm not used to those kind of things. Every time I left the room, you know, if I'd sat on the bed to put my shoes on and there were wrinkles on the covers, I'd come back and they were all smoothed out. I had my phone cord hanging out, just hanging over the one of the dressers, and they wound it up and made it nice and neat. Just everything was tidied. It was kind of a different experience having everything tidied around you. Every time I'd go out and walk around and do anything. But, you know, I made the most of those hours that I was there. I walked all over the rocks. I didn't do the bridge climb like you did, but I did cross the bridge. You can walk across the bridge, and I got some, you know, pictures of the Sydney Opera House and, you know, the whole circular quay there. I got to go out to Manly Beach. The sun was deceptive. I mean, it wasn't terribly sunny either of the days that I was there, but I was out on the beach and I was only out on the beach for about an hour and a half. My neck and arms got roasted. And, you know, that's something that I didn't even know until about 10 minutes till I walked away. I was like looking down and I said, man, my arms are getting kind of red. And I put my backpack on to leave the beach. And I was like, ooh, that kind of hurt. That didn't feel good.
Yeah, so, it is deceptive.
So it wasn't like super hot, but, you know, it went out fine. But one of the things that I really got to enjoy was that Qantas First Lounge. And that's One World Emerald. Coming into that, they had really nice dining. Again, I had already mentioned the experience there. But one of the things that everybody told me to do was go get a massage. And I got a hot stone massage while I was there. The gal covered the burns on my neck with some aloe and a skin cream so that I was able to not roast on my whole flight home. And then you had messaged me and said, hey, I'm on my way to the airport. So I left that and I still had my Polaris flight booked home as well. I'd canceled the Delta One at that point, but I was like, if American has any delays, I'm going to take the Polaris flight that I was booked on with you home. And of course, I went and met you and your P2 at the Centurion or Amex Lounge, whatever it is there. And of course, as I'm leaving, I lost my phone service because I had these passes and I didn't want to turn my phone on for basically 45 minutes. I was like, I'm going to get charged another day if I do this. So I go and I get on the plane and turn the Wi-Fi on long enough just before we boarded to find out that there was a schedule change that was going to mess everything up coming home. And I'd had, you know, business class booked on AA with the flagship all the way through. So I was sitting in lie flat from Sydney to Los Angeles. Lie flat from Los Angeles to Dallas, and then first class home. And then I tried to get on their internet, and it was a cluster. I was talking to the flight attendant, and she said that they're changing their Wi-Fi providers. So something in their system is causing things not to work right. I ended up getting it on, and I had to buy it twice, but I got one of them refunded because it was just a mess.
Yeah, it didn't work at all for me. For that entire flight from LAX to Sydney, it didn't work at all. And I asked the flight attendant, he's like, yeah, that happens on this route. I don't know. So, but on United, it was fine. Everything worked great. But yeah.
In the end, I got online and I made the change that I thought I needed to, and it kicked me out of first class both ways. So I was very frustrated and upset. But, you know, thankfully for our community, we have people out there who say, hey, you know, go to the flagship lounge, which I did on return. I mentioned I already did the Qantas lounge, but I thought, what the heck? You know, I'll stop in the flagship lounge returning. And I had a lounge agent who helped fix my flight once I got there. So, I mean, he was super helpful. I don't know how he pulled it because the Twitter team said the seat was gone, but somehow he got me back in that seat and things were good. So, that's my tip of the week as we wrap up this episode, is that people can make a difference if you ask the right questions and you're not a total jerk about it.
Yeah. And it was funny. I was keeping up with your saga as I was flying over the Pacific, looking at your empty seat because they ended up, you know, you canceled it at such a last minute that they had cleared the upgrade list and that seat went out empty.
And it was kind of sad. And I ended up making it home in time to see my wife before it was an hour from the airport once I landed. So everything went, okay once we got going there. But there were some close calls. And again, I think if you talk to the people, you say, hey, what went wrong here? Why did this happen? I shouldn't have gotten kicked out of my first class seats when I made the change. All I was doing was changing one of the flights so that I didn't misconnect. I accepted the downgrade on that one, but there's no reason I should have been booted from the first class seat from Dallas back home. And they fixed it. So, talk to the people, ask questions. You don't have to go in with an entitled attitude, but just say, hey, what happened? Why did this, occur? And, you might find out you get your seats back or they fixed the problems or whatever it is that you're doing. It's hotels, flights, car rentals. Ask the questions and you'll find out that all of a sudden, some people actually do want to help.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for sure. You always got to, like you said, stay flexible and have a positive attitude.
Well, Mike, anything else talking about wrapping up Down Under? So anything before we go?
So after we both flew, both American and United's longest flights, I think I have an opinion on which one I would do. But overall, so American, I think was good. I think the seat was comfortable, probably a little bit roomier than Polaris. It was outdated. Like they had some features like VGA ports. Like who the hell carries VGA cables to hook up to the IFE screen or like faux wood? It just, it just looked a little outdated. The IFE itself was very sluggish. I mean, I kind of got frustrated by that.
Mine didn't even work.
A lot of times. Yours didn't work.
Yeah. But I didn't need it. I never used it. I had my computer and my phone, so it was fine.
Yeah, so definitely the amenity kit wasn't bad. It was a nice like Shinola leather pouch. And I've had like some of the Shinola amenity kits before and they were pretty flimsy bags. So this was one of the nicer ones. Their headphones, obviously, I think they have some of the best headphones, Bang and Olufsen headphones. But of course, they protect those with their life. They collect them an hour before landing, which is to me is kind of chintzy because like they have three prongs. Like what are you going to do with a three prong headphone? Kind of odd. Food was pretty good. And other breakfast was not that great. And of course they had the ice cream sundae. Can't beat that. And then the lounges so just looking at the lounges that I had access to flying that class, the flagship lounge, it was pretty good. But I really think United has an edge here on their long haul premium product. The seat wasn't quite as comfortable, but still pretty good. I'd say it was more refined. They had have touches like that lamp. I think the controls are a lot better, a lot more intuitive. I like that faux marble. I just think that it's a little bit more of a modern look. And obviously they integrate the theme. It's the stars, Polaris, and everything into everything. I just think it's a better decor and stuff, but more pleasing. IFE was very good and responsive. Beds, that Saks bedding was very good. Oh, and the pajamas, of course, because flying a flight over, 13, 14 hours, you get pajamas. 14. I think the Polaris pajamas were a lot better. They were, branded, a lot better made. And the amenity kit, it actually is it was like a Therabody bag, which I think is the number one thing that I evaluate with amenity kit is how well can I reuse it in the future? Yeah, I don't really care about the stuff inside, but maybe except the eye mask, but how well can I reuse it? And this bag actually is pretty good. And then obviously, same ice cream sundae, can't beat that. And then as far as the lounges, so in Sydney, I had access to the Star Alliance lounges. So New Zealand, Singapore were good. And then obviously in Houston was the Polaris lounge, which I think I had a bit of a better experience than you because I arrived in the late morning. It wasn't very crowded. We could get dining. They had the full food spread out. I took a shower. It was nice. Like you said, not the biggest Polaris lounge like Newark or Chicago or O'Hare is probably bigger.
Dulles is twice the size.
Dulles, yeah, I haven't been in that one yet, but yeah, it was pretty good. So I think probably no surprise to a lot of people. I think United has the edge as far as a U.S. International business class product.
I agree. I think that the product on United was just a more refined process all the way through. However, you know, that cost is what really made me do that. And I said, I don't have as many United miles as I do American. And for 100,000 miles versus 65,000 miles, and I decided to go with AA to save some miles. And, mm-hmm. you know, 65,000 miles, just about almost all of these signup bonuses fall into that range. So
yeah, that is a big difference. And I mean, at the time I booked it, it was 60,000 versus 80,000. So a little bit closer, but yeah, still it was that, you know, 60,000 to, you know, for a 15-hour flight is really not that bad. Because, you know, a lot of people, they, you know, use the CPP metric, cents per point, which could be debated end on end. But I've seen some other metrics these days, like miles per hour. So if you look at, you know, your miles flown over or the miles that it took divided by the hours of your flight. So, you know, I got like 4,000 miles per hour, which I think is pretty good.
Cool.
For a flight of that distance.
Well, if anyone has questions, you can certainly hit us up in the Award Travel 101 community and ask questions about booking Sydney, Australia. Mike and I both did American and United, different directions, and got to experience the different products and lounges. And we want to thank you for joining us in everything we do here and to get engaged in the community. Thanks again for joining me, Mike. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
To learn more and to join in the conversation, the free 100,000-plus member Award Travel 101 community is open to all who wish to better themselves. For more intermediate and advanced strategies, check out the Award Travel 201 community, which is $89.99 annually. To learn how to better your award searches or to build a better card strategy, feel free to set up an Award Travel one-on-one appointment with one of our experienced team members. You can also email us at contactawardtravel@gmail.com with any questions. And our next meetup is located in San Antonio, Texas on April 26th through the 28th of 2024. And we've opened up a few more tickets to members. To learn more, visit Taco Bauta Fiesta on Eventbrite. And as always, please support the Award Travel 101 podcast and community with your next reward card application. Safe travels and take care.